So our message to Scottish Coal is, we are not going to let you get away with this. You may be very powerful, you may have lots of money, and you may have huge vested interest in exploiting coal here, but we're not going to let you tear up Scotland's landscape and destroy the planet just for profit, not at least without putting up a bit of a fight.
Welcome to the 300 to 350 show, the weekly climate change bulletin that's made for Resonance FM in London and syndicated by community radio and independent media around the globe. The Camp for Climate Action in London has just completed its annual week-long mix of sustainable living, education, movement building and direct action against the causes of climate change. This year the camp spawned around a dozen international offspring and still managed to increase attendance at the London camp to a reported 5,000 people. As the camp winds down and campers return Blackheath Common Land to its former glory, we catch up with what happened at two of the new fledgling camps earlier in August. Later in the programme we'll hear from Ollie, who's still on site at the Mainsail Wood Solidarity Camp in Scotland. But first, here's Molly of the Irish Climate Camps media team speaking to me earlier on the line from Dublin.
So maybe you can say a little bit about the site that you decided to camp on and why you chose that site.
Yeah, okay. So we camped in Shannon Bridge in County Offaly, which is in the middle of the country, and we camped in the shadow of a peat-fired power station. And we had a very good site right beside the power station. It was wonderful because everybody coming to the site really saw this big power station, which is actually the largest peat-fired power station in Europe. And we chose peat burning because peat burning is dirtier than coal. It's an extremely inefficient way of getting energy, especially for electricity. And that particular power station produces nearly 1 million tonnes of CO2 a year. And it's the largest peat power station in Ireland and in Europe, and that's why we chose it.
From a climate change perspective, how much is known about the impacts of burning peat? I mean, you've already said it's more intensive than coal.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, we decided that we wanted to have a climate camp about climate change, obviously, and following the inspiring model that we had seen in the UK and spreading across the world because of the urgency and the injustice of climate change. So we discussed a few options. We talked about coal. There's a big coal power station in Ireland. But we settled on peat finally because not only is it dirtier than coal, but also there's the destruction of a carbon sink. Active bogs are like forests in that they take in carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. They absorb CO2. And to burn peat, you have to destroy the bog, drain it of water, dig it up. It's like huge open cast mines. If you look at satellite maps of Ireland, you can see these horrible orange scars all across the Midlands. And that's where the land has basically just been dug up by industrial machines. The peat is then dried and burnt for electricity, which is just crazy.
So what were some of the actions that you did during the week?
Yeah, well, we were very happy with the number of actions. People really, we had direct action training on the camp, and people really got into it with great enthusiasm, especially new activists who were just taking direct action for the first time and really beginning to feel comfortable with it and find it as a great way to express their frustration at governments and corporations doing absolutely nothing about climate change. So there were some peaceful pickets at the actual power station itself in the mornings. There was a bog restoration action where lots of people, about 60 activists from the camp, went to a bog, and kids and people of all ages, and we filled in some drains because the first step in destroying a bog is draining it. So we took a symbolic action, the first step in restoration, basically. And then on our big day of action, there was stuff happening everywhere. There was a huge parade through the town of Shannon Bridge that went to the gates of the power station. And Shannon Bridge is a small town in the Midlands and not that much happens in it. And the local people said it was the most exciting thing they'd seen in their town. And that power station, it had been closed all week because our camp was there. And then there are two other peat power stations in the area, not very far away, and there were actions at both of them. There was a banner drop at Eden Dairy. A small group ran inside the power station and dropped a banner that said "Climate Justice Now" from the conveyor belt. And at Lanesborough, another power station, there was lock-ons and a trespass, which succeeded in shutting down that power station for that day as well. So there were actions at all three Peat power stations on the Saturday, and two of them were closed down. So that's an amazing result for the climate camp.
What was the overall assessment by people that were there about the success of the camp?
Yeah, I think people were very happy. Our final plenary at the end, where we were doing a little bit of assessment, people had all kinds of interesting things to say about how they'd been inspired to... Interestingly, lots of people were inspired to continue their own sustainable lifestyles after the example of the camp, where obviously we had a communal vegan kitchen and all our electricity came from solar or wind. People who had taken direct action for the first time and found it to be really positive step that they wanted to take in their lives and that they wanted to do more of it. Yeah, and it was a really just great thing for the Irish environmental movement that we all came together at a camp and met and built more relationships and more friendships. And I think there's great optimism that people really will continue to take action on climate change through the coming year and onwards into the future.
I was going to ask what's next, but also how do you see the campaign against peat moving forward and what prospects do you think you have of bringing that to an end?
Well, it's interesting because the semi-state body that extracts the peat, Bord na Mona, they say that they're not going to open any more bogs, but they don't say how long there is left in the mined bogs they're already extracting. Reports vary from between 10 or 15 years. So I think what's next for the peat campaign is certainly building more links with the local community. And those of us who travelled to the climate camp in the UK this year in London learned a lot from the workers' climate action and the possibility of building links with workers and unions and trying to get them to work with us and build on the understanding that we're not on different sides. Nobody wants to work in a job that's bad for the environment, and nobody wants to work in a job that's going to end when a finite resource is finished either. So that's one of the things that's ahead for the future of the peat campaign. And I expect that there'll also be more actions at the power stations in the Midlands in the coming year. What's next for the climate camp movement? We're still deciding. We're having a big evaluation meeting on the 26th of September. I think everyone's looking forward to seeing friends again on that day. I think there's energy and positive hope to have a climate camp next year. Who knows where? I mean, there's been planning permission granted for expansion of an airport in the west of Ireland onto a beach, which is crazy. Money Point, the coal power station, is still there, our biggest single source of emissions. Shell are pushing ahead with their crazy gas pipeline in Mayo. So there are options for us. But also, we're going to continue to take direct action through the coming year. It's not just about the camps. It's about resisting climate change in our communities during the rest of the time as well. So we're certainly optimistic and inspired to do that as well.
Mm. And was the camp successful in putting the issue of peat on the national map, as it were? Did it get coverage in the national media?
Yeah, we got very good coverage. Mostly balanced and sometimes even sympathetic. We raised the issue of peat definitely like it was never raised before. There's this kind of feeling that peat burning is, because it's an indigenous fuel and because we've done it for generations, that it's somehow clean and acceptable. And the fact that burning of peat destroys a carbon sink, a biodiversity habitat, and is dirtier than coal got so much more airtime and so much more coverage as a result of our camp. I think everyone was very happy with the media campaign.
Okay, and kind of government ministers see the contradiction in trying to cut emissions and continuing with peat?
Well, we have the Green Party in government, so there's a huge contradiction that an energy minister is a Green Party minister and that he thinks it's okay to preside over burning a carbon sink is completely contradictory. And also, this power station was opened by Brian Cowan, who is our Prime Minister, and obviously we think it should be shut again. But the ministers were on holidays and they stayed remarkably quiet about the climate camp.
Right, so it's only been open fairly recently.
Yes, he was Minister for Finance when he opened it, but it was opened only recently. It was a huge investment of hundreds of millions, which was absolutely crazy. it is a relatively new plant, the fact that we are planning to burn peat for another 10 or 15 years in the current climate crisis is really insane.
All right, any final thoughts?
I think everyone's just really happy. It was a lot of hard work, but the people who had worked the hardest organising it at the end, they said it had all been worth it. 9 days is a long time. Our camp ran for 9 days. But it was definitely worth being there for that time to build a bit of a rapport with the locals, to get a feeling for the area, to take great actions. And we didn't have too much trouble from the Gardaí either. Their policing presence was kind of similar to the presence that there was at the UK climate camp this year. They just drove around a lot watching us. Obviously, it was different on the day of action. But I think the first climate camp in Ireland was a success on many levels, and we're all looking forward to continuing that success.
That was Molly from the Camp for Climate Action media team in Ireland. If you want to find out more or get involved, the Irish Camps website can be found at www.climatecamp.ie. Earlier in August, the Camp for Climate Action pitched up in Scotland. I spoke to Ollie of the Camps media team, who is still on site at the Mainshill Wood Solidarity Camp.
What was the camp's target and why did you choose it?
Well, I suppose the main focus of having the Camp for Climate Action here at Mainshill was to support an ongoing struggle, so to support both the Solidarity Camp, which had been going for a number of weeks, and to support the local community who have been objecting to an open cast coal mine for a number of years now. So we wanted to make the Camp for Climate Action in Scotland as holistic as we could. We didn't really want to focus on any single issues because our analysis is such that there's a great number of issues that are causing the climate catastrophe, and most of those are very linked into social issues as well. But because we're in an area that's really affected by open cast coal mining, and because coal is such a massive issue in Scotland, one of our main focuses or targets was on the vast expansion of both coal extraction and combustion in Scotland at the moment.
I'm not clear about whether the kind of ongoing Mainshill camp is actually stopping work at Mainshill at the moment.
When we occupied the site, we chose to because work had started. So they'd started clear felling quite a large area of plantation, and there was drilling rigs in to do like borehole or test drilling to see the actual extent of the coal seams. So we took the removing of the plantation as a sign that they were going to start work and occupied it. And so since then, they've only removed a certain area of plantation and haven't been able to get the wood out. And also the borehole drilling was stopped for over 3 weeks, until one morning when the police and Scottish Coal came onto the site and removed all the machinery. And then they've started doing some limited drilling in another field next to the site that we hadn't occupied. So as far as we're concerned, if we weren't here, then they probably would have cleared all the plantation and woodlands already, and they probably would have finished the borehole drilling. We were quite certain that by the autumn, they wanted to have started work properly on this site. So the closer we get to then, the more we'll be disrupting them. They've also got quite a tight operation in South Lanarkshire, so depending on Mainshill being operational soon, because there's two of the other open casts that are nearby are coming to the end of their lives, and although they've extended them as much as they can, they'll probably be closing them quite soon. So they don't want to be left in a situation where, like, the sort of machinery and workforce is in one place where there's no more coal and they can't start work here. So we actually think that we're causing them really, really big problems at the moment, and we've reckon that we've set their entire schedule back, well, at least 2.5-3 months now, which is quite good. And so the longer we're here, the more impact that has.
What kind of level of opposition is there from local people? I mean, there's kind of open cast coal projects right across Scotland, aren't there?
Yeah, the whole central belt of Scotland is riddled with them. And one of the scary things is what the expansion is going to look like in the coming years. Generally, there's quite a lot of opposition wherever the coal mines are going to be. In South Lanarkshire, for example, communities have been fighting against one open cast after another, or one extension to an open cast after another, for years and years, mostly through the sort of legal channels that are available to them, so the planning system, because rightly they thought that there were democratic avenues available to them, and if they showed that enough people were in opposition to the mines, then the South Lanarkshire Council Planning Department would reject them. But especially after this last one, after Mains Hill was approved, there was just over 650 letters of objection written to the planning application, and given that the population of Douglas is only about 1,600 people, it's quite an overwhelming level of opposition. There was also a survey conducted by the local MSP that showed that over 70% of the people in Douglas were opposed to the project. So I think it was really after this last one that people have lost all faith in the sort of planning system and the legal avenues which are available to them, which is why they've embraced the form of direct action that we're taking at the Solidarity Camp so much, and the community's been incredibly supportive of the occupation of the site. And, you know, lots of them talking about that if it doesn't work out, or if we get evicted, then they'll be the ones doing it next time, and, you know, that kind of thing. So, like a shift in tactics, but it's much more like a mutual support between the activists living on the site and the local residents who are continuing the campaign from the communities.
What are the specific health impacts of open cast mining?
Well, actually, there's been nowhere near enough research done into this yet, which is one of the big problems with it. So communities that live next to open cast coal mines are pretty sure that there's negative health impacts, but the mining companies and the government, for example, will tell you that there aren't, but it's really due to a lack of research. So what we did recently at the Camp for Climate Action produced the Coal Health Study, which has since been adapted and expanded and is being turned into quite a considerable document that uses research that people from Douglas have done, using statistics and data that's been got from the local GP surgery. And it basically shows that incidences or levels of certain cancers and respiratory diseases that you would expect from there being lots more dust particles in the atmosphere are substantially increased in Douglas when you compare it to, say, an average for South Lanarkshire or an average for the UK. And if you compare that to an equivalent village in East Ayrshire, which is just a short way away from Douglas, but has even more open cast coal mines, then the statistics are very similar. So it's really compelling evidence to show quite what the health impacts are in these areas. And hopefully it's going to be like something that really helps the campaign in terms of showing people just what the disastrous effects of open casting is.
Right. I was looking on the Mains Hill site, and there was a new campaign that started up against a new project that's been given the go-ahead in Airfield, which is kind of odd that they've given the go-ahead for that. It's already in an area of great landscape value and is adjacent to a number of listed wildlife sites. What are the council thinking there?
That project has actually, well, Scottish Coal have recently submitted an application for that, so the council haven't decided what's going to happen to it.
Okay.
But basically, Midlothian Council, again, is notorious for making it as hard as possible for people to object to plans and then forcing through projects that have horrendous environmental implications. So, for example, in the Midlothian local plan, open cast coal mining in that area is supposedly ruled out, yet an application has been accepted, if you like, for open casting there. So it contravenes the local plans. Like you say, it's in an area of great landscape value, as is Mains Hill open cast in South Lanarkshire. It's right next to one of the most important bird breeding grounds in the whole of the Lothians. But chances are that Midlothian Council will accept this one as well. They did something very similar 3 or 4 years ago with the A68 Dalkeith bypass, where that went through very sensitive environmental areas. And still they built a big road through an area that residents really didn't want it. So I think it's just a pattern across Scotland of local councils sort of pandering to the wishes and needs of the coal mining companies and ignoring the local residents. There is actually one example of a council that tried to do something different, and Fife Council a couple of years ago, when ATH Resources put in an application for a mine at Muir Dean, they saw the level of community opposition to it and they refused that application by ATH Resources. But then of course it just went up to a higher level and Scottish ministers overturned the decision. And now there's a big open cast at Muir Dean. So it really seems that even if local councils are honest and decide to reject plans because of community opposition, then it's just going to go to an even higher level of government and be accepted anyway.
Right. So there's a genuine enthusiasm for open cast coal mining at the kind of Scottish level of the Scottish government. How does that square with Scotland's really ambitious and kind of apparently global leadership in terms of its climate change law, which it passed recently?
Well, it doesn't square at all. The Scottish National Party's entire energy policy is based on coal, what they would consider to be clean coal. but like as most of us know, clean coal is a myth. The technology doesn't exist, so there's no way that you can reduce CO2 emissions from it. Yeah, as far as we're concerned, Scottish Climate Change Bill is basically just rhetoric and greenwash to make it look like the Scottish Government is doing something about it whilst acting as a smokescreen to cover up all the really environmentally destructive things that they're forcing through, such as all these new open cast coal mines, such as a new coal-fired power station at Longannet, a new coal-fired power station at Hunterston, airport expansion at all of Scotland's major airports, a new road bridge over the Firth of Forth just north of Edinburgh. There's no end to really large-scale environmentally destructive projects which are being pushed through in Scotland at the moment. And unfortunately, a lot of that has been allowed by this supposedly really ambitious climate change bill.
Okay, do you want to say a little bit about the actions that happened during the camp?
Yeah, the first thing that happened, I think, was that a major conveyor belt that takes coal from one of the open casts here, about 7 kilometres across the countryside, to a loading depot. That conveyor belt was sabotaged, and that meant that no coal could be transported for the day, and I would imagine that that was an extremely expensive thing to fix for Scottish Coal. We had a large demonstration outside the South Lanarkshire Council, the headquarters of South Lanarkshire Council, which is in Hamilton, just north of here, and that was to try and highlight the corruption that's so prevalent in South Lanarkshire Council. And we dumped a number of bags of coal out on the doorstep and made quite a big fuss about it. There was also some indie media journalists set about trying to do interviews with certain key people involved in allowing Mainsill to happen. They just wanted to interview them to see what the story was so that we could show people what they had to say about it. And unfortunately, the first person they went to was Councillor Danny Meikle, who's notorious for being a bit of a corrupt thug around here. And when they went to his door to try and interview him, they were assaulted by him and his family and then ended up being arrested for a breach of the peace and spending the night in Lanark Police Station, which is quite unfortunate. But one of the most important actions for us was the fact that we were helping to occupy the site here. There was lots of workshops on how to build tree defences, how to dig tunnels, build barricades, all that kind of thing. So the fact that there was a lot more people here all contributing to the like more long-term sustainability and defences of the site was really, really good.
Can you say what the overall assessment of the camp was by people that were there? Was it considered a success?
Yeah, I think people who attended it thought it was quite successful. It certainly did an awful lot for the campaign against Mainsill open cast. It brought national and international media attention to it. I think it started to put a lot of pressure on the Scottish ministers, which is important, and we hadn't managed to do up until then. So, you know, with journalists going off and asking the Minister for Environment and the Health Minister to comment, it sort of really raised the issue and the profile. And I think it helped to bring more direct action to the area in support of the community struggle, which was really important. And probably most importantly, a lot of the local residents around here were really happy that the camp happened at Mainsill, and they thought it was a success. So I think that's probably the most important indicator for me.
Okay, I mean, all these local campaigns are kind of ongoing, but as far as the camp's concerned, what's next?
Yeah, the project will definitely be ongoing, or at least the sort of collection of climate activists that want to work on the issue together will definitely continue. We're having quite a big debrief this coming weekend where we'll decide what direction to take it. We've certainly liked the model this year of regionalising the Camp for Climate Action and sort of bringing the struggle to different parts of the UK instead of just having it a one big one in one place. But we're also wanting to explore sort of supporting community struggles a lot more. And I think, you know, we achieved that to a certain degree this year, but it would be good to think of ways that you could do that much more effectively. And whether that involves having a direct action camp structure or not, that's for us to see as the time goes.
Okay, and I guess the Mainsill camp would appreciate kind of ongoing support in terms of people visiting and donations and stuff?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's really important that there's a constant stream of people coming in to live at the site. I think people will find it quite an empowering and inspirational experience. Certainly people who have come to visit or come to stay for a few days have found that. But for me, anyway, it's one of the most important climate-related things going on in the UK at the moment. It's one of the few places where a permanent stand is being taken against coal expansion, so that the issue isn't allowed to go away. But I also think that it's this kind of direct action that's really rooted in a community struggle that is where direct action can be at its most effective. So, well, we just think that as many people as possible should come here, and then maybe similar things can happen in other parts of the UK and Scotland, and those campaigns can sort of strengthen each other as well. But yeah, we definitely need people and donations of food and building materials and rope and all that kind of thing.
That was Ollie on the line from the Mainsill Solidarity Camp, which is slowing up the death march of Scottish coal. If you want to get involved or find out more about the Scottish, Irish or Welsh camps, or in fact any of the other international camps that have sprung up recently, visit the Climate Radio Archive and see the links and references for this programme. The address for the archive is www.climateradio.org, where you can also listen to this week's programme again. That's about it for this week. Thanks for listening.